This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, all. It is Thursday, the 18th of March. It's 12.05, coming up to 12.06 here in the studio. Outside, it's nice and sunny, looks kind of warm. There's birds flying by and all kinds of wonderful things. And here we are, stuck indoors. That's me and Christine Wong and
Arvind Yuvraj.
We're going to be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. A bit of a different topic today. We're talking to you about, of all things, email. Yes, that thing that we all love to hate. And the question is...
how would you rate your email etiquette at work? Formal, overly polite, casual, polite, informal, shorthand, and what etiquette?
And that's because our email culture is real and more important than ever, apparently. Then we'll be talking a little bit about how people are still telling us that email is obsolete, that it can be replaced by Slack and a whole bunch of other stuff. I'm not so sure about that, so we'll be talking about that. And then wrapping up with
how musicians are turning to live streaming now instead of live performances.
Come on then, Arv, talk to us about your favorite way of communicating.
My favorite way. So this was an interesting article that came from HBR, Harvard Business Review. I thought it's interesting because we normally think of email as like the default tool that we use to communicate at work, right? But this piece was written about compassionate email culture. Compassionate email culture is basically where teams work together to reduce the overall email traffic. So the instinct to manage only our personal inbox is insufficient. It's time to flip the script on how we handle email, and the secret is focus on protecting other people's inboxes instead of your own. So curate and focus your recipient list before you hit send. Remove anyone unnecessary, and they can always be added later. Write in an organized fashion. The content of every message should be clear and specific. And apply situational awareness. So ask yourself, does this conversation really need to happen over email? Could it be a phone or video call instead? Many messages can be deferred until the next casual conversation or routine scheduled meeting. So I found this to be, because I think it's one of those things that happens on such a daily basis, on such a routine basis, that no one actually thinks about how you keep your inboxes, how you keep other people's inboxes, who you're sending emails to, who's supposed to be reading your emails. And sometimes you get these like mass emails where you are attached in the CC that you don't want to be a part of, but now everyone knows that you're in the CC and who you are and that you're being emailed to.
Dear Sir, Madam, Datuk, Datin, Tantri. All of those, right?
Yeah, those. So coming about the CC, it says that one thing you can do is consider the BCC or blind carbon copy. So BCC for any email that doesn't require communication directly between recipients. This eliminates the possibility that conversations will expand unnecessarily or veer off topic. And if a discussion is needed as a group, consider a meeting instead. Never use it for secret correspondence or to allow someone to monitor a line of communication. So apparently this is something that happens in some workplaces. You BCC someone to sort of spy on the conversation that's going on, and you pretend like the conversation is only taking place between two or three people, which is just, it's rude, and also it breaks trust. So always clarify in the body who is receiving the email, even if they are in the BCC line. This transparency creates trust, clarity, psychological safety. Additionally, it protects recipients who don't want their email addresses shared. And the use of BCC also reduces the risk of reply all responses that can quickly clutter everyone's inbox. So again, not compassionate email email culture. If you need a reply from individuals, they can reply directly to you. The other thing is about timing, which this I found very interesting, because business hours vary, especially in a hybrid work environment like the one we have now. But it's usually safe to assume that they are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Do your best to make sure your timing of email delivery matches the recipient's work hours. So think about the person receiving instead of your own work times, especially if you're sending it to someone in a different country. Off-hour correspondence distracts the recipient, who might feel the need to reply in the moment because it's a reflex. This domino effect then pulls the recipient out of deserved leisure and back into the workplace. Compassionate emailing can be used for away from work messages. So if your colleague is on vacation or family leave, mind the rules. And also, respecting the clock means upholding your team's boundaries. You are free to draft an email outside of business hours and schedule it to deploy whenever your recipient will be back online. And if something is so urgent and cannot wait, pick up the phone and make a call. Which I thought was, I mean, we think of it as common sense, but also it's not as common as we think it is.
Yeah, I was about, I mean, just going through that whole list in my head, I was thinking like, I do that, I do that, I do that, I do that. But no one's taught me to do this. It's just be a nice person. I don't know. And you're right. You know, I think that there's a lot of stuff on that list that, like you said, we think is common sense or that we naturally assume people, you know, would think about. Like, especially, you know, the clear, concise thing. Like, I don't, like, I send you guys emails all the time, but I tend to do like lists or like numbered lists or bullet points or something just to make things clear, or I'll bold things, like, because in my head I'm like, I want to just double, triple check that this is going to be clear to the person receiving it regardless, right? But like when you say that out loud and you point out that not everyone thinks that way all the time, it's really jarring to me, because I'm like, why wouldn't you? You know?
Yeah.
A couple of things in there that, you know, I want to touch on. I had a colleague years ago who was one of these people that you would send him an email and he would essentially highlight the bit that he was replying to and paste it underneath. So it's like, this is what you said, this is my response to it, which I thought was a great way of doing emails, because it's incredibly clear and concise and you know exactly what he's talking about. Whereas now sometimes you get an email and it's just like you send a text message, you know, but obviously now on WhatsApp and whatever, you can quote what was sent to you. Before that was a thing, you know, email did it, but it was a difficult. But I think that's a very clear way of doing things. And it's only fairly recently that I've started scheduling emails. I know that makes me a bad person, but I find it very useful, you know, and I realized how much of a good thing that it is. I'll write something out, I'll be ready to hit send, and I'm like, no, because if I send it now, then they know that I'm awake. You know what I mean?
We've all received the emails from people that are like weirdly timed at 1 a.m. and you're like,
and nobody
what?
Wants that, right?
11:15 p.m.
Exactly.
Yep.
Nobody wants that. Especially now when we've got these really odd working hours, and you might still be awake at 1 o'clock, but the thing is, you're probably bedtime procrastinating, you know, a revenge procrastinating, whatever it is. You don't want to be getting that email, because then that pulls you out of that revenge bedtime procrastination.
I think for me also, the thing about scheduling and making sure that, you know, you adapt to other people's working hours, that's something that honestly I didn't think about much. So I'm glad that that was brought up in the article. But I also feel the need to clarify that for me, I don't think email should be a medium that you are expected to respond to immediately. That's the whole point, I think, of it's like sending a letter, you know?
It's not instant messaging.
Correct. Yeah. Like if you want an instant response, use an instant platform. Like use WhatsApp, Telegram, Signal, Google Chat.
Slack, Meet.
Blue Jeans.
SMS at worst.
SMS, call.
Yeah.
Like then that's clear then that you need the urgent instant response. If it's an email, I kind of feel like chill.
Yeah. And that other thing about, you know, on your WhatsApp or whatever messaging platform it is, I've just sent you an email. Yeah, I know. I'm reading it right now.
It's almost as if we get the
email. You don't need to send me a WhatsApp telling me that you've sent me an email. I get it. Give me time to read it.
So it's interesting that you brought that up, because it's the other thing, a way to expand on this is the language used in emails or the kind of words that use. And that's something that we'll touch on after the break. But it's, you know, sometimes the way people speak in emails is very different from the way we sound in real life.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. And apparently that's not the professional way to do things.
Really?
It's not the way to sort of write proper emails. It's not a way to have good email culture.
All right.
All right, my dude. How you doing? Is that what you mean?
I
can actually talk like that, is it?
We'll see.
All right, how would you rate your email etiquette at work? Let us know. Get us via Twitter if you want to take part in the poll. We'll get the numbers when we come back, but the options are formal and overly polite, casual and polite, informal shorthand, or what etiquette, mate? We'll be right back after these messages. Music from The Killers, Somebody Told Me, here on BFM 89.9.
Beats, funk, mixtapes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Christine Wong.
Arvind Yuvraj.
We're talking about email etiquette today, and how would you rate your email etiquette? Let us know. We are running a poll over on Twitter. You can get us at BFM Radio. The same over on Instagram. Same question. What are the numbers, Alf?
The numbers are at formal or overly polite at 25.2%, casual polite the highest 65.4%, informal shorthand at small 3.1%, and what etiquette at 6.3%.
Over on Instagram, anything, Chris?
So on Instagram, we have a couple of responses. We have Michelle Shiv, who says overly polite. Dan TMG says, for me, casual polite, but some humor here and there doesn't hurt anyone. And then the like smirk emoji.
Now, I've got a message here on WhatsApp, and I like this. Number ending 8995 said, I saw someone with this paragraph in their email that was sent at office hours. I thought it was a great way to manage each other's expectations. And it says, I'm sending you this email at a convenient time for me. That doesn't mean that this email is reaching you at a convenient time. You should not feel obligated to respond to my email if it arrives in your inbox after your office hours, on a weekend, during your personal time off, or on a public holiday.
I love that.
I love that, right?
Good disclaimer,
I might start adding that to my email headers or something.
Yes. Thank you very much for that. It's, it's nice, that. Makes me feel all warm and fuzzy.
It's very passionate.
So I understand that your time is important to you. Yeah. You know, reply back when
just
you can.
Just takes the pressure off.
Yeah.
By the way, I just sent you an email on WhatsApp.
Right.
I've got another message here from number ending 7196. I think my etiquette is okay, but I can't rate my colleagues because they don't read their emails.
Just calling people out, my goodness.
I think we've all got colleagues like that, haven't we? Mentioning no names. Anyway, you've got an expert on the line.
Yeah, so on the line with us is Shirley Taylor. She's a leading expert in email and business writing skills. And her TEDx talk, by the way, Don't Write Like a Robot, is the number one TEDx talk in Malaysia.
Ooh.
And we just wanted to ask her, like, Shirley, you know, what is good email etiquette and culture in a company, and why is it important?
Well, email etiquette really covers so many things, or at least it should. But what I'm finding is that too many organizations don't even have an email etiquette or culture. They let each division or department figure it out for themselves. And this just leads to the chaos we're experiencing right now, with too many messages flying all over the world, unclear, confusing, long-winded, and with people losing hours reading and rereading emails, missing key information, wasting time and making errors. So with the rise in virtual communication over the past year, I'm glad to see that a lot of organizations are now focusing on designing a virtual communication toolkit. And what I'd love to see is more organizations also creating an email communication toolkit. And this would include some best practices that all teams should focus on. Things like keeping your messages clear and concise. Use simple language, no jargon, no slang. Structure emails logically. Use bullet points where possible. Only CC people who are directly involved. Include a clear and specific subject line, and so on and so on. I do think that creating a company's communication toolkit should be an essential part of the communication culture of every organization. And that could also include developing a style guide to show everyone how the branding should be used, where to use initial capitals, where not to use them, how to use bullets and numbers, etc. And also fonts. Why is it important? Well, to make sure communication culture is the same in each department and in each team, and to make sure that written communications going out to the world represent the brand and give a great impression of the brand.
So, Shirley, with so many other ways to communicate now, like instant messaging, why is email still seen as a viable option for professional communication? And do you see that changing anytime soon?
Well, from the research that I've seen recently, email is going nowhere for at least another decade. But I have seen an increase in using things like WhatsApp. When some people contact me, let's say to book a virtual training program, they often very quickly take their communication onto WhatsApp. And this is a great tool for quick and instant messages and answers. And I'm pretty sure messaging apps like this will increase in use. I do think it's great that we've got a lot of team communication platforms now, like Microsoft Teams, Slack, Google Chat, and loads more. If you're communicating within your team, Email is definitely not the right tool to use. I think we should make the most of these team communication platforms so we keep all correspondence about each individual topic in the same place. This is so much better than all the emails flying around. So there's so many different ways we can communicate, and it's really important to choose the right one, SMS, WhatsApp, email, whatever. And sometimes the answer should be none of these. Too many people, yes, including me, are guilty of writing an email when really it would be so much better and quicker to pick up the phone. So let's start picking up the phone more often. It's so good to hear a human voice.
It is nice to hear a human voice. So, Shirley, tell us, what are some of the biggest sins committed in emails, and how can people avoid making them?
Oh, my goodness. There are so many sins being committed in emails. Let me focus on three. Number one, not thinking about the reader. Too many people are so wrapped up in their own thoughts about the topic that they forget the most important person, and that's the reader. What does the reader need to know? What don't they need to know? Could this be misinterpreted? Is my message clear? Is the tone appropriate? Etc. Read it out loud as though you are the reader. And when you do that, you might decide that you need to revise certain parts of your message, break some points into bullets, and tighten up your sentences generally. Number two, not making it clear what action you want. You know, if you don't make it clear what action you expect the reader to take, then you'll not get the right response. It's that simple. So I always suggest that you save the word please for the action section. Whenever you use the word please, you will always follow it with a verb. Please send, please reply, please let me have, please provide. This is so useful when you get to the section in your email where you're telling the reader what you want from them. Start your sentence with please, then make it clear exactly what you need them to do. And finally, number three, I've got a list that would go on and on and on, I tell you, about these bad habits and sins. Number three is not getting to the point. Too many sentences start with long-winded, redundant phrases like, I am writing to inform you that, please be advised that, kindly be informed that, please note that, please be assured that. Oh my goodness, busy business people do not have time to read through all this long-winded language. Readers want to know what's the main point. And quite simply, the main point begins right after those redundant phrases. So get rid of them and keep your language straight to the point, but also concise and courteous.
Shirley, do you think the formalities of email remove the spontaneity in communication and just take too much time? Why or why not?
Actually, I'm wondering what you mean here by the formalities of email, because email is an informal method of communication. Of course, it's still got to be professional because it's a written record after all. But too many people today believe our writing needs to be more formal than it should be. Many people who attend my training programs tell me, but Shirley, when I write, I must write in a different way to how I speak, right? Wrong. It shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that difficult. In 1921, when our ancestors wrote letters on their manual typewriters, they still used passive voice. It was very formal and distant and quite cold. Today it's 2021. Nothing happens slowly. We need to get to know people quickly. In person, we can be much more informal and friendly and warm. However, something very strange happens when we put our fingers on our laptops to write an email. Suddenly, we go back to these formalities again. Our writing becomes very long-winded, with long sentences, long paragraphs, passive voice, and flowery words. Why? Our ancestors got it right. They had one language, one voice, the same voice for speaking and writing. Today, very often people have two voices, one voice for speaking and one voice for writing. And this doesn't make sense I had a phone call from a potential new client, and we really hit it off on the phone. We were on first name terms, having a really great conversation. We were both being very authentic and friendly. Afterwards, she followed up by writing an email to me. It began, "Dear Shirley, we spoke." Full stop. Well, honestly, I felt like I'd been slapped in the face. On the phone, we'd started developing a relationship using very warm language. But when I read her email, it didn't sound like her at all. But fortunately, as we continued our email conversation over the next few weeks, her writing really warmed up. We should be using the same voice for speaking and writing.
Shirley, we regard email as a default tool that we have to use without any real training, I guess, whatsoever. As more digital natives enter the workforce, do you see the way emails are written changing permanently in the future?
Our communication has always been shaped by the times we're living in. Social media has reshaped the whole way we communicate. Young people in the workplace today were born with social media. They know how to communicate concisely using fewer words, images, emotions, stories. Isn't it sad that when they go out into the workplace, too often these young people are losing all this by getting caught into what's happening in the corporate world, by writing long-winded, template-style jargon that bears so little resemblance to a conversation between two real, live human beings. So, yes, I really do hope that there'll be some radical changes in the way people are writing email. And not in the future. It should be happening now. I tell these people that they can influence change. Don't accept this writing style. Don't get wrapped up in this language that's been around for decades. Today, people want to read messages that are simple, clear, concise, and understandable. Readers need to know exactly what to do and how to reply. Everyone can achieve these objectives today by using what's commonly called plain English, but I like to call it authentic English. Make sure it sounds like you. Good writing can really make a huge difference, and that difference needs to be a human difference. Online every day, we are constantly being asked to tick boxes that say, "I am not a robot," or "prove you are human." So here's my challenge for you. Next time you put your fingers on the keyboard to write an email, prove you're human.
That was Shirley Taylor. She's a leading expert in email and business writing skills. And you can also find her on shirleytaylor.com.
It felt like I was just back at home just for a few moments. Thank you very much for that, Shirley. Last reminder. Sincerely, yours faithfully.
Yours
Richard
truly.
Bradbury. Mm-hmm. We're going to be coming back in a few moments, of course. We are asking you, how would you rate your email etiquette at work? Let us know. We are polling over on Twitter. The numbers haven't really changed that much, actually. But do get in touch and let us know what you think via WhatsApp as well, 018-789-8899. Also, get us on Instagram. That's also at BFM Radio. When we come back, the case for email, about how some people are still telling us that email is obsolete, that it can be replaced by Slack, by Teams, by Google Chat. Some folks still swear they can do more over instant messaging, or even better, some proclaim Zoom. Mm. They keep saying that's the future. Please, enough already. We're using email in the 70s. Yeah. We're still going to be using it in 2070. When we come back, also an update from Bursa at break, courtesy of Arv over here. Judas Priest to take us into the break, breaking the law here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.